A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to our good community-minded friends at Horicon Bank. So a bit of a beer run of sorts on today's show. Speaking of, there is this great movie on Apple TV called The Greatest Beer Run Ever. It's a holiday weekend. Put it on your list. Here's the story. It follows a guy, real-life story here. Nickname, Chicky. Chicky wanted to find a way in 1967 to get beer to his buddies who were in Vietnam. And so this is the whole story of him getting beer to Vietnam, how they found the ways, how they got the logistics, how they got beer in the middle of a war zone. It's a great movie, so just put it on the list. Anyways, today we're going to talk about what happens when you invest in people and place, from empowering young girls to run their own race to brewing one of the last history-soaked batches of a Milwaukee classic. Girls on the Run, Southeastern Wisconsin, is helping girls build confidence and character and connection through intentional activity-based programs. And we're going to explore what that means. Executive Director Tina Jones is going to join us. And then we're going to shift a little bit. I don't know. Sounds a little corny, but right from the finish line to the tap line. We're going to talk about the last Schlitz, like the final limited brew that's tapping Milwaukee's historic brewing heritage. All the stories that made Milwaukee famous around the world. The brewer who's brewing this last batch of Schlitz up in Verona from the Wisconsin Brewing Company is going to join us. Kirby Nelson will join us a little bit later on the show. So it's a bit of youth development, legacy preservation, purpose and nostalgia all coming together. That's what this show does. We talk business, we talk innovation, and we talk community. Coming up next, Tina Jones, the executive director from Girls on the Run, Southeastern Wisconsin. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're talking about what we really care about on this show: confidence, community, and the next generation. Girls on the Run is doing all that work with thousands of girls across Southeastern Wisconsin. Joining me in studio this morning is Tina Jones, Executive Director of Girls on the Run of Southeastern Wisconsin. Tina, thanks for taking the time out of your day to be here with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
Of course. So if someone's hearing Girls on the Run for the first time, give us a sentence or two about what the organization does each and every day.
Yeah, so Jeff, we are all about building girls' confidence through an empowerment program that is for third through eighth graders. It is a positive youth development program that incorporates physical activity. Okay. So the girls are moving, they're staying active, and they are learning lessons for life. You know, when I think about when you want to keep it short and sweet, you know, in the offerings, I want your listeners to think about this program as having access for all girls. Okay. They are practicing in a safe and judgment-free environment. It is a research-based curriculum. They have caring coaches. We are planting the seeds for healthy behavior. And the girls feel like they belong.
Yeah. So you're really blending the physical with the mind, right? You're running with the life skills, the confidence, the relationships, the decision making, all of that. And I find, and you probably agree, but when you run, your mind thinks a little differently, a little bit more clear, right? And that's part of the learning.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where I do my best thinking. I know you're a runner. Yeah. I'm a runner. I feel like it does bring clarity. It also, you just bring out those good endorphins where right. You feel better.
Yeah, very much so. So what's your why with this role, Tina? I mean, how did you personally get connected to this work?
Well, I'm so grateful. I was a gymnast my whole life. Okay. All the way through
college.
Yeah. Nice. And so.
Where'd you go?
UW-Whitewater.
Nice.
Go Hawks.
Right.
Yeah. And I planting the seeds that from a very early age, I learned how physical activity made me feel better. Mm-hmm. I also was blessed to have parents that were able to teach those lessons for life, get me to those practices. I had caring coaches. It's the place where I made my friends. I was around like-minded individuals. So I went from, being a collegiate gymnast to then, oh my gosh, this is not a lifetime sport. What am I going to do? Which led me getting into triathlons and running and then I had kids.
Okay.
And my kids, I have two girls and a boy.
Right.
And we got them in sports, got them health active. And I saw in my own life what sports and physical activity can do for a kid's life. And so fast forward, I got involved with our school's PTO.
Okay.
I became fundraiser there.
Nice.
And I was asked to help plan a run.
Okay.
You know, school community run, which brings the community together.
Mm-hmm.
It gets families moving, the kids moving. And it was just a really great, again, like community builder and fundraiser. And that then exposure brought me to Girls on the Run.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for their first executive director. I read about the mission. I was like, are you kidding me?
That's
this
right.
is what
Perfect.
I believe
it,
in.
There it is.
It is all right there laid out. Let's get these kids healthy and active and supported. And using physical activity is that base.
So talk about the big day that's almost upon us. You have the spring 5K celebration coming up. Can you give us the basics on when and where and, give us a sense of what the energy is going to feel like for this event.
Okay, I'd love to talk about the 5K. I want to give you a little bit of the nuts and bolts. The program meets for 8 weeks,
okay.
twice a week.
Okay.
The girls are, again, learning those healthy life lessons while they're training for a 5K. So it's truly a mastery program,
okay.
a build-up program.
Leading up into the
leads
event.
Up to then this celebratory 5K. And it truly is a celebration. It's a non-competitive event,
okay.
Jeff. So it is all about the girls. People that are there to support the girls. These girls are going to walk, they're going to run, they're going to roll, or they're going to skip across that finish line. And along the way, all the girls have a 5K buddy who is often a family member or family friend. So again, how important it is to have those family members
yeah.
supporting those girls there. The feel, the vibe of the 5K is phenomenal. There's just so much energy. I mean, think about a third grader, right? There's energy. But then you bring together, we'll have over 2,300 young girls there and then their 5K buddies. So 5,000 people there to run, walk, or skip across that 5K. So super, so much energy. We have over 160 people that are along the course, so 30 cheer groups
okay.
that are going to be motivating
Keeps
these
you motivated.
Kids.
That's right.
You
That's
know, good. and high-fiving them along the way. And then kids' activities, they'll be blinging their bib, they'll be sparkling little sparkles on their faces, they'll be the Brewers mascots, the Bango's going to be there, the Dancing Grannies. It's just a great, great event that is open to the community as
okay.
well, as long as you feel like you're there to support the girls.
Nice. And the 5K is Sunday, May 31st at American Family Field. You meet at the tailgate house right there on One Brewer's Way. It's open to everyone, as you mentioned. Can you sign up online or can you just show up for the event?
Registration's open now until Thursday. Sign up online. If you don't do it then you can register day of. We prefer you to do it online just because it cuts down on the lines.
Yeah. And it's good. I really like your language around kind of the happy pace, right? It's not a competitive race. You're there to support and to guide and to have fun and just enjoy a beautiful day.
I know. Isn't happy pace Okay, such a great term.
It is great.
I mean, I like to talk about it for not only your, you know, running, but also for life. Like, what is our happy pace? Where do we feel good? At what pace that is? It could be a slow walk. It could be a jog. It could be a full out sprint.
Yeah. Tina, before we kind of zoom out on some of the bigger picture girls in sports issues, what are some of the other big events that the organization does each and every year?
Yeah, so I do want to just mention with the 5K, we are still looking for volunteers.
Okay.
So that is online as well.
Note to my family if they're listening.
Yeah, like I mentioned, exactly 160 cheer groups, but we also have 150 individual volunteers helping with registration, water stops, and so on.
Okay.
It will fill your cup if you show up.
So very good.
I didn't know I was a poet. Also, we have new sites that we are registering right now. And what that means, Jeff, is that we partner with mostly schools.
Okay.
The program is offered at school, after school. And so when we partner with a school, they're helping bring in the volunteers through their school. They provide the safe spaces for the girls to run. And it's easy access because they're running right after school. That is, if you're interested in becoming a Girls on the Run program site, sign up is now through the end of July for fall season.
Okay.
We also have an awesome Soulmates program. Ooh. I was just going to mention this to you since you are a runner. We have adults that are running and raising money for Girls on the Run. We're partnering with the Milwaukee Lakefront Marathon.
Okay.
Where we will, again, we have an awesome training program, amazing coaches, a supportive group environment where we kick off in June 10th.
Okay.
It is a 16-week training program, and then again, it'll be culminated at the Milwaukee Lakefront Marathon. Another way to get involved, we have Golf for Girls. So a great fundraiser that's coming up Monday, August 17th, Eagle Springs Resort. And that is so awesome because even if you're not a golfer, you can play. It's a scramble, 9-hole course. Really awesome. And then finally, Jeff, I want to just talk about our biggest event. It's in the future, February 2027, we are going to be celebrating our 20-year anniversary impacting over 25,000 girls and their families. And it's going to be at the Pfister, February 26th, and such an amazing event.
Very good. Tina, when we come back, I want to zoom out, kind of a little bigger picture, talk about the state of girls' sports and kind of why this work matters so much right now. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are back with Tina Jones from Girls on the Run, Southeastern Wisconsin. In the first half, Tina, we talked a lot about the programs and some of your big local events. I want to zoom out a little bit more now. You know, we're seeing more girls than ever involved in organized sports and new sports, too, which is really cool. The flag footballs, wrestling are really exploding. But there can be a drop-off after those middle school years to really kind of take it next level, if you will, to high school. What are you seeing as some of the common barriers to continue sports and really make it a lifelong pursuit?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, it's actually even before the teenage years. And so we talk about, you know, really girls' physical activity levels are declining at age 10. And they continue to decrease all the way through adolescence. So some things that are happening during that time is the girls are having an increased like body awareness and self-consciousness. There's a confidence gap. Many girls just really don't believe they're athletic enough. And the difference between boys and girls is boys are okay with making more mistakes and continuing on, where the girls will tend to drop out. There's a shift from play to performance during those years, right? And so girls who simply want to have fun and just like create friends and move their bodies are feeling pushed out at those years. There's fewer role models and visibility for these girls.
We talk often on the show about mentorship, and it's usually used in the workplace setting, but in terms of play in sports, it's also really important. It's a big part of what Girls on the Run does as well.
I mean, 100%. We, our coaches are like so amazing. They are the true bread and butter of our program. They are mentoring these young girls. They are teaching them and showing them that they can do hard things. We have a really cool junior coaching program, so you're getting high schoolers
nice.
That are engaged. Plus, the girls are just seeing, you know, in the third, there's a third through fifth grade, sixth through eighth grade, but they're seeing, because they're combined with the older girls are mentoring those younger girls, too.
Yeah, that's great. Can you share a story of a girl who maybe started the season and then finished crossing the finish line with just a totally different mindset?
I mean, Jeff, I have hundreds and hundreds of stories. It is such a powerful program, but I can tell you about Ava.
Okay.
So Ava joined our program 2 years ago, and her mother, single mom, described Ava as shy. She didn't have any friends. She didn't feel like she fit in. She was just really, really struggling. And she did the program year one, came out a little stronger, did the program year two. And that little Ava crossed that finish line with the biggest smile on her face. She actually came to our sneaker soiree. Her mom talked about how she is now inviting friends over. She has opened up because she had an environment where she felt like she belonged. She was supported by her coaches. She was supported by her teammates. And that made her come out of her shell. And what parent doesn't want their kids to have friends?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's all about. Collaboration and connection through running. I love it. Can we wrap up here, Tina, with a bunch of kind of final sprint questions?
Absolutely.
You good with that?
I love that.
All right,
I love
all right.
it.
I always like to ask, especially when I have experts in the space right next to me, what's your favorite brand of running shoes?
Well, I'm an Asics Nimbus.
Okay. All right.
And why? I've had them for, I don't know, 20 years. Okay. And why mess with anything that's working?
Very good. So for a fan that's listening that hasn't run a 5K, what's your advice?
So I would suggest, let's think happy pace. Let's think take it slow, set a goal, and then work slowly towards that goal. Give yourself time. You're not going to go from no running to all of a sudden running a 5K. Give yourself time to build up to that.
Do you run with or without music?
With.
With? Okay. I'm usually about half and half. Sometimes I just like to be with my thoughts, and other times I'm like, I don't want my thoughts.
Absolutely.
I need music and something to motivate me. All right, a fitness band? You own
I wear
one?
An Apple Watch now.
Apple Watch, okay.
Back in the day when I was really caring about my time, it was, you know, a Garmin, but those days are long gone.
Okay. Do you have a favorite route or track that you stick to?
I love to run along the lake.
Okay.
That is my happy place.
That's great. What about a favorite post-run beverage?
Muscle milk. You know, it's been a longer run.
Yeah.
I think that's a great mix of protein and carbs.
Okay.
If it's been a shorter run or I don't necessarily need the muscle milk, I'll just make sure I have something that is, you know, hydrating.
Very good. All yeah. right. Finally, Tina, you look out maybe 5-6 years. What's your hope for girls in sports here in Greater Milwaukee and across the state?
Well, Jeff, I want girls to have more access to sports. I want them to have the same access as boys do. I really am hopeful that there's going to be more role models that are more visible out there for these girls to see that they can do hard things, like we talked about. I think that I want to have the awareness and the education for our entire community that sports and physical activity is not something that is optional. This needs to be a seed that is planted early on in a young child's life for them to then really help lead a really flourishing and successful life.
I love it. The 2026 Girls on the Run Spring 5K is Sunday, May 31st at American Family Field. We'll see you there.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Upswing. This is Jeff Sherman, and we are joined on the phone by Kirby Nelson. Kirby, this afternoon in Verona, Wisconsin, you're about to do something historic, right? We are brewing, well, you're going to brew the final batch, maybe the final batch of Schlitz.
Yeah, you know what? Let's stick with the maybe the final batch, because I think Schlitz is such a brand with such cool heritage and history that, you know, every brand has its ups and downs, but right now we want to do a brew celebrating the legacy of Schlitz and basically do it in right around that era that they were number one selling beer in America and take it from there.
Yeah.
I mean, I am so excited about this. I can't tell you.
At its peak in 1950, Schlitz was the number one beer in the country. Like you mentioned, 5 million barrels.
Correct. 5 million barrels, and Bud was behind
it. It was a cultural force, right? And now, 177 years later, it's, you know, not ending with a simple goodbye. It's ending with a single batch built from the brewing logs that you went back and found from 80 years ago.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really cool.
What did it feel like when you kind of realized, wow, you have that ability, that possibility to brew the very last batch of a 177-year-old beer?
Well, I a lot of people talk about being beer geeks. I'm not. I'm a brewery nerd. I love okay. breweries. I love the industry. I love the history, everything. You know, I'm fascinated by it. And Schlitz, again, was a beer that made Milwaukee famous, you know, and rightfully so. And so we have a very good working relationship with Pabst. We've done a number of projects with them and for them.
Okay.
And so when we heard that the beer was going to be put on hiatus, so to speak, we just asked them, hey, could we do a brew of Schlitz that basically is based on when it was a golden era time for the beer, when it was on top of the world, and let people know what this was all about.
Yeah. What does that era of beer represent? Like, how was the taste and the process and the culture different when you go back to the heyday of Schlitz?
You know, I will go on for a little bit, which I tend to do, but when I was looking at these records, a friend of mine, his name is John Lupowitz, and he's a Schlitz collector, and he happened to be at Schlitz. You know, he went there and they were clearing out all these offices, and he bought a number of things, including 5 logbooks that were dated from sometime in 1912 to 1948. And they weren't really specific formulas per se, but they gave me numbers. Like, Schlitz used to have a higher original gravity, and that means more raw material is used for 12-ounce can, so to speak, which makes for for lack of a better term, a beerier beer. It's not going to taste markedly different than the mass market beers of today, but there's just going to be more to it. So if, for those of you who just understand the term original gravity indicates percentage of solids we achieve in a liquid during the brewing process. Mm-hmm. Today, I bet you Schlitz is around 11. Back in 1948, it was 12.7. So you had that higher percentage of material, which just is going to give it a little bit more guts. Even though by that time, Schlitz, I believe, was in the bittering range in the mid-30s, prior to Prohibition. Mm-hmm. By the time the 50s were around, they were saying just had a kiss of the hops. So the liberty I took there is, number one, I'm using original gravity numbers from 1948.
Okay.
And hoppy numbers, and back when they were giving more specifics in the logs I was looking at, they would just say X number of pounds of domestic hops, no variety mentioned, and Y number of pounds of imported, usually in five pounds of them imported for every pound of domestic. Well, I saw some scrawling in one of these in German, something about Herlitau, bingo, Herlitau Mittelfrou. And a hop called the Yakima Cluster was the workhorse of the 20th century American brewing industry. So it could be a blend of Cluster and Hallertau Mittelfrou to give more bittering than the beers have today, but it's just going to be so well balanced. So
nice.
It has more personality.
We're talking with Kirby Nelson from Wisconsin Brewing Company, the man tasked with brewing the last Schlitz.
Let's call it the man who's privileged.
It is a privilege.
Pabst did not hesitate. They right away said, please do. Again, they've been great partners with us.
Yeah.
They're very much behind this project. And again, I am so excited that I'm nervous as hell about doing a beer because I want it all to be right, which is good.
So,
can't be too cocky.
Why does nostalgia hit so hard when it comes to brands like Schlitz and Pabst and Old Milwaukee? Is it just because of the sense of place we all have with beer?
I would think so, because let's face it, you know, a lot of Germanic types settled to Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. Milwaukee became a brewing center. you know, besides Schlitz, there was Pabst, there was Miller, there was Blaps, there was Gittleman, there was a number of them. And, you know, Milwaukee became very well known for making very solid American-style lagers. And, again, Schlitz was on top of the heap. And that was at a time post-World War, you know, I'm talking about right now, post-World War II, where I believe we were really feeling our oats as a nation, starting to really grow, that the car and highways were becoming more popular and everything. We became more mobile as a nation. It was a very strong time, at least in our memory, of our country's past. Mm-hmm. And so people remember Beer Town, Milwaukee Brewers, come on. And the fact that a beer is being made to represent the good old days, you know, the golden era of Schlitz, really has struck a chord. I'm just absolutely flabbergasted by the attention it's gotten. I believed we were doing it, which was going to be pretty much just a Milwaukee-centric project. And we've gotten interest and inquiries from media all over the United States and Canada. People are very interested in this beer, and it really is a great feeling that people do still remember what Schlitz represented and do still want to support it and see what it's all about.
Yeah, so you're probably expecting people from all over today.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we're brewing, but the main blowout's going to be June 27th. We're going to be brewing, mm-hmm. and the beer is going to take roughly 7 to 10 days, you know, in warm, fermenting in warm condition, and we'll crash cool to lager to 30, 32 for, 3.5 weeks or so. And so literally in about 4.5 weeks, we'll be centrifuging it and kegging and canning and, you know, inviting people to a big party. This beer isn't going to be available in normal retail places. It's just a one-shot deal, so to speak. And it's going to be available just at Wisconsin Brewing Company on that day.
Very good. All right. Let's kind of zoom out a little bit, Kirby, if you will. Like, we've seen a lot of macro dominance in beer. You've seen the craft explosion. Now a bit of maybe consolidation and, you know, some closures, too, on the micro level. What mm-hmm. phase of beer do you think we're in right now? I mean, you're in it each and every day, but, like, define the business state of beer.
Well, look, I began my brewing career at Heilemann and La Crosse in 1978, okay? There were no craft breweries. Hell, when they started, they were called microbreweries. And the number I've commonly used is, from what I found out, there are about 61 buildings in this country owned by 41 companies making beer. And Wisconsin was a bright spot. We had 7. Hmm. Well, you had, you know, the rise of the micro being a reaction to our two beers just being premium and light beer for the most part drank in this country. And albeit with a slow start, I got involved with Capital Brewery in 1983. If you'd have told me back then what was going to happen in the U.S. brewing industry after trying to go out and sell craft beer initially, I'd be astounded. You know, by 2023, we were over 9,900 breweries in this country, and vast the majority of them were small. But the market tastes have changed. You know, mm-hmm. for a long period of time post-prohibition, beers like Schlitz and Anheuser-Busch began to dominate. You know, and the smaller breweries were solely regional breweries, I should say, were outcompeted by them. And this was kind of a reaction to that, to beer becoming what some folks just considered too mild, not enough personality, to brew the type of beers that represented what beer was all about when it first began.
Yeah.
And it just grew and grew to the point where I think it got to saturation. There were so many funky, weird beers that, quite frankly, I don't think a triple IPA is going to appeal to a whole lot of people. It certainly doesn't me. And so what I've seen lately is a reaction to just oversaturation in the market, and people post-COVID have really stopped drinking as much as they used to.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, change, people really. Are choosing the THC drinks and NA spirits, so there's more competition California. For sure, right?
Oh, right. Look, the majority of our business here isn't beer. We are running canned cocktails. We are doing THC drinks. I can't believe how much THC we put out of this place. You know, there's a lot of interest in those type of beverages, but we still really view ourselves as brewers. And beer is never going to go away per se, like anything else. It's going to have its peaks and valleys. And I saw that the first couple, 3 months of this year already, beer is up 1% to 2%, which is significant in my mind.
When we come back, more with Kirby Nelson in Verona, who's brewing the last Schlitz today. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're talking with brewmaster Kirby Nelson, a longtime Wisconsin craft beer pioneer who's brewing a special farewell batch. Well, farewell for now, dubbed the Last Schlitz. So, Kirby, what are some of the lessons that today's brewers can take from kind of the rise and fall of Schlitz?
Well, yeah, you know, just because you're on top of the world now doesn't mean you're going to be on top of the world, you know, tomorrow or the next day. It's I think it's just a lesson. You always have to focus very hard on what you're doing and the quality of the product and, you know, appealing to the market. Part of Schlitz's downfall was they thought they found a way to make it more efficiently, per se, and it turned out to hurt the quality of the beer to the point the public noticed it, did not like it, and turned away en masse from the brand. You've got to be careful. You know, like what happened with Bud Light when it was released with a controversial figure on a can, how much of that disappeared. You've really got to be well aware of the message you're sending, but ultimately the beer has got to back it. You know, it's got to be there, it's got to be solid, and it's got to be consistent. And when people get to know the and love the beer you're making, you have to make sure they're getting it time and time and time again.
Yeah.
Do not deviate.
So if people show up today in Verona, you can pre-order the 16-ounce four-packs. You can also do it online. But if they come on June 27th to pick up the beer, what's the shelf life of that beer? You think people are just going to buy to, you know, put in the fridge and can I, 3 years from now, can I drink it? Or well, like, what's the shelf life of a beer?
Put it this way. We have gotten so sophisticated today. Look, dissolved oxygen is a huge issue when you're packaging beer, okay? And granted, when I started back in 78, the dissolved oxygen before bottling out of the government tank, it was called, had to be 250 parts per billion or less. Now, if we see more than 50 parts per billion in a can, we're upset. So the technology and sophistication has grown to the point where beer has a much longer shelf life. I still would like to see a mild lager like this drank within 6 months or so, but... Okay. I've had some of our beers, like Maybach, for example, that 2 years hold up in a can very well. It all depends on how beer was handled during packaging.
Very good. A couple final questions for you, Kirby. What's your favorite beer of all time and why? Is it one that you've brewed or you got something special?
Well, put it this way. People ask me what's the favorite beer I make, and I say, well, I hate all of them. And you know why? Because I'm not enjoying them. I'm analyzing them. And beer is not meant to be analyzed if you enjoy it. But like, you know, oh, this is good and that's good. Mm. But I couldn't name just one. It's stylistically. Stylistically, my favorite beer overall is probably Maybach. And a well-made Maybach, you know, it's that real solid malty character that I love, well-balanced with decent hop rittering and so smooth. And, yeah, it's got some torque to it also. But the beer itself is the kind that I love. I don't really have a specific favorite beer. Okay. I just like beer.
All right.
Let's change it to love beer.
Is there an NA beer right now that's getting it right in your book?
Put it this way. The one I'm most familiar with it is one we may call Road King.
Okay.
And it's being made in partnership with Harley Davidson. And our head brewer, Luke Foth, is just an amazing brewer, and he's very, very good at NA products. And, you know, by the use of reverse osmosis technology these days, and, you know, you're basically concentrating the beer but taking a lot of alcohol out, and then you replace that with water, you end up with less than 0.5 ABV, and you may have to add some batch sweetener, maybe a little bit of hop character. But ultimately, with this technology, you can make NA beers so much better than they used to be. I mean, I enjoy Road King a lot, and that's about the only NA I go out and try.
All right. And Kirby, what's the best brewery tour you've ever been on?
One I'd given.
That's right. I figured that'd be your answer, and that's a good one. I'd like it. So remind us again what's happening today in Verona and give us all the details on the June 27th event.
All right. Well, quite frankly, we're ripping into Wisconsin brewing history, its glorious past, and doing the best we can to brew, you know, the Schlitz Lager as it was in the mid-20th century range to represent the glory days of American brewing. In terms of the macro breweries.
Very good. We are all looking forward to the final Schlitz. Well, it may not be the final, but we're calling it the final Schlitz. I'm guessing that five years from now, it's going to come back, right?
To the history. I hope so. You know what I mean? It's just too important of a beer.
Very good.
And, you know, and again, ultimately, I believe this would be Wisconsin Brewing Company's and Pabst's love letter to Wisconsin.
I love it. Well, all the best with the beverage, and we'll get an update from you soon. And I appreciate your time, Kirby.
Yeah, no, I wish you'd let me get back to brewing, okay?
All right, go.
All right.
See ya.
Thank you very much, and take care. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally, I rewatched The Devil Wears Prada recently. I haven't seen the new one yet. But I want to go back to the original. This movie's 20 years old now, and it really hit me how much, like, career wisdom is in this movie. Here's what really jumped out to me. Like, early in your career, and this is graduation time, right? Colleges, high schools. Early in your career, you don't always get that perfect job. You get the job that becomes your classroom. And that's what my mantra always is. Do what you love, but know that you may not be able to do it right away. That is the main character in Devil Wears Prada. She doesn't know the industry. When she gets there, she says, all right, I don't care about this industry. The culture is like totally foreign to her. But the minute she decides, you know what, I'm going to lean in, I'm going to dive in, I am going to do the best I can here, everything changes. Like, her language changes, she raises her standards, she anticipates the needs of her boss, she gets promoted, and suddenly everyone takes her seriously. This is 20 years ago. All that stuff really matters, especially now in graduation season. So there's a lesson in this movie, Devil Wears Prada, to say yes to a role. Keep on stepping up, take it seriously, show up, learn, and do all the little things that you need to do no matter what you're doing. Doesn't mean that you don't have to squeeze out every bit of learning and every bit of lessons in every opportunity, but the movie nails it. Success has to be your definition, not everyone else's. Ultimately, if you watch this movie, one of the main characters ends up saying, you know what, this isn't for me. I've compromised too much of my values and my relationships. And she goes back to the life that she had. So I'm really kind of interested to see Devil Wears Prada 2, because I'm sure it's a continuation story. So I want to have you this holiday weekend, maybe put Devil Wears Prada on your list, because you're going to learn a lot about relationship building, about power by proximity, and about what careers and community mean to all of us. Anyway, the new version right now in Marcus Theaters, in theaters all over, but the original version is on whatever streaming platform you use. It's a holiday weekend. It's a good time for a movie. Check out Devil Wears Prada.